It is Saturday, June 4th, 2011, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, we'll be doing some geek news in the first half. In the second half, we'll be talking about intellectual property, copyright, trademark, things of that nature, and kind of where the state of copyright is right now.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now, of course, for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KOSP. Geek Speak is a Creative Commons endeavor, which means that the copyright is free and open to use as long as you give us credit for what we do. Today's theme, Garage Mechanics, is by Craig Strawn from Cape Town, South Africa. More information available at notesfromthecape.com. If you'd like to participate by making a song for us for our theme, please feel free to do so. You can send us information about the song that you think is appropriate for GeekSpeak's theme at geekspeak.org. In the second half of the show, we will be talking about copyright, but our guest, Michael Mont, is here now in the air room. And Michael, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And Miles Elam, a programmer and political junkie. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
Now, it's really interesting that I made a slight mistake when saying hello to Michael. Your mic didn't come up, Michael. Say hi again.
Hi, I'm sorry. Thank
Wait,
you.
I'm sorry. No, it's fine. Your mic didn't come up. No, now, you didn't bring his mic
actually,
up.
Actually, I pushed the button, and that's the thing I wanted to talk about. We're talking about the issues about the technology here at the station. We've got a board in front of us right now that wasn't up. Last time it was updated was in 1997. And if you've got a cell phone or a computer, you'll know that it's probably less than 3 years old. 3 years is kind of my de facto, you kind of need to refresh your technology. In the sense that if you're that far behind, you've got security vulnerabilities potentially, you've got older gear. And so I normally talk about a three-year window for equipment. The equipment that's sitting around me right now goes past that 3 years by a little bit.
Is it older than we are? I'm just curious. Like
it's older than Ben is, but no. Who's not here, I shouldn't dig at him. The project we're doing right now, Upgrade 2011, I'm sure if you listen to Dr. Don, you heard a bit about it. We're asking you to donate money so we can upgrade the systems here at the station. We've got this wonderful matching grant that gives us the money necessary to do the project as long as we can have you help contribute enough to match it. And we're in a situation now that we're doing quite well. We are asking to pull in $3,000 during GeekSpeak right now, and we'd love your contribution. The phone number, of course, is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. Now, my mistake in not pulling Michael's mic up was due to probably a slight depression of a button that didn't light up. Miles, what's your excuse? Because you seem to do it quite a bit when you host. Is it normally the board? Is it the gear? Or is it you? I'm just
Wait,
curious.
How would you know? You never listen to my shows.
I always listen to your shows when I'm on them. So the goal for the show, we're going to keep doing wonderful content for you. We're going to take a couple breaks during the show to ask you to call in. You're welcome to call in now, right now, and we'll continue our conversation. We're going to do some geek news. The phone number at 1-800-655-5877. Call right now. And of course, you can do it online as well, securely and safely at geekspeak.org. Excuse me, at kosp.org. It's funny how I say that a lot. kosp.org, of course. Miles, your first news story for the day, sir.
Sony, the PlayStation Network...
Yes.
Got hacked again.
No, this be the third time?
I believe so.
Oh, man.
This time grabbing another 1 million user accounts. And
didn't they turn it off to make sure that this wouldn't happen again?
Well, they turned it off and then tried to get some stuff up and running. But, you know, there's money at stake, so there's pressure to get it up as soon as possible. And apparently it wasn't fully cooked.
Now, this is the system that allows your PlayStation to plug into a network, play online games together with other people through your PlayStation.
Yes.
And it got hacked a while ago, and there was this whole question of, it took 10 days before they actually told people about that, because there's legislation in California that says within 10 days of a breach, you've got to tell the people whose credit cards could potentially be stolen. And we're talking basically a lot of credit cards. And then the story that I covered, I think, 2 weeks ago was that there was a concern whether the people that were hacking in were kind of good guys or bad guys.
2 weeks ago after the second hack.
The second hack. And the question was, are these people trying to sell these credit card numbers, or are they just kind of making an example of the company? And sure enough, the credit cards were being sold. Mm-hmm. So now they turned it back on, allowing customers to put in their credit card information in again. The thing that's horrible about this story is that I recall one of the things we said, and it might have been me, but I'm going to blame you, was that now it should be a lot safer because they'll be more careful.
I don't know that I would have said that.
I think I might have. I'm pretty optimistic.
And different organizations, one of them that I'm reading right now, Ars Technica, has seen the data set because it is available around on the net, and it includes individuals' home addresses, their names, passwords, email addresses, and people reuse passwords. We talked about this on the show when we had our epic password show, which I highly recommend. Go back into our archives and check that one out.
Yeah,
it was a great show. Because people reuse passwords, it also means that because of this hack, that a lot of other resources are going to be made available, in addition to the fact that your credit card has been leaked.
Meaning that if I'm using the same password for my bank or I'm using the same password for my Facebook account, those things are now comparable to compromised.
This whole thing has been an identity theft goldmine.
That's really depressing. I guess that's what happens. So how do you fight this kind of thing? Don't put your credit card on systems? I mean, get temporary credit card numbers. I'd say ask
temporary
your bank for
yeah,
temporary
yeah,
credit
yeah, there are temporary credit card numbers.
You know, this idea that you contact your bank, you say, I want a credit card number, and then just use that for your PlayStation account, and then get another one for another account, and then say, this much money should go on that every month.
Right, and don't reuse your passwords.
Remember, the easiest thing to do for a password is think of a long phrase and use the long phrase.
Right. And in addition
My grandma likes to bake.
Right.
That's a pretty good password, actually.
And in addition to that, if you have to log into something with your email address, please, please do not use the same password that you use to access your email account to log into that site.
Because, of course, once you have an access to an email address account, then you can just ask another system to email your password to you, and it will send you a reset your password thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Okay. Let's move on to another story, because, of course, we could talk about passwords forever and ever, but the next story, Mr. Elam.
The UN has released a report that is stating that three strikes internet laws, in other words, if you're caught downloading music illegally or something like that, that you would be cut off from the internet. If you're caught doing it three times, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And the UN has taken the position that internet access is an international human right, that the access to information, and there is some contention about that. At the same time, there's also a lot of evidence that says that the communication lines and getting access to the internet was something that has helped out in the Middle East with regard to revolutions. So that's a nice long discussion that we can have probably some
that's
later
interesting.
Time.
The Nine Nations has said this. It definitely is an American idea, I would say, pretty universally.
Sorry, what is an American idea?
Access to information is important. You know, we have pretty...
An American idea?
Saying is that from our perspective, it seems like an obvious, yes, information should be accessible. That's a human right to have knowledge. You know, we teach everyone, all the citizens of the United States get an education, that's what happens. And the idea that some people wouldn't get that or wouldn't have access to information seems kind of abhorrent to us. Or at least, I don't want to speak generally.
This is actually most of the developed world, has this belief.
I'd go with
but
that.
But as a point of history, that's a nice point of history. The UN Declaration of Human Rights that was passed way back in the day was headed by former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. So I guess, yes, you could say that the U.S. has its fingerprints on the document, but people have largely in the international community taken
it. And, of course, the boundaries always are an interesting space. Of course, access to how to make a pipe bomb. Some people would say, no, that shouldn't be available, because then it's more likely that people will make pipe bombs. I mean, there is definitely this idea, and, of course, that information is online. Definitely. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, access to sexually explicit and pornographic material, some people would say that shouldn't be accessible by everybody. So when the details come, when you press it, it does become a more complicated issue. And you can see where a situation where government wanted to be restricting it for what they feel is a good thing for their citizens. But this idea that it's a human right is it's intriguing. I think it's a cool idea. And you're right, it's not just access to information, it's communication lines. It's the ability to
organize. Yeah.
All right, what's your next story? Don't actually do it. We'll just talk about what we're going to say in a second. What is it?
I was going to talk a little bit about copyright and streaming of media.
Okay, well, and we'll probably step into copyright at that point. I want to go ahead and before we do that, just to mention first, do you have any thank yous, Miles?
Yes. Have a big thank you to Eileen from Los Gatos. Thank you. Helen from Scotts Valley. Victor from Capitola. Mary from Carmel. Susan from Salinas. Michael from Seaside. Patricia from Pacific Grove. And Sharon from Watsonville. Thank you very much for your pledge to KUSP.
And like all of those wonderful people, you can call in right now and make a contribution to KUSP. And the reason we're doing this is really simple. We want to produce the best radio we can for you. We want to get the content that we produce all the time with wonderful volunteers and staff here at the station. And of course, our multiple shows we bring to you nationally. We want to get that content to you as clean and beautifully and artistically, if you will, as possible. And to do that, we need good equipment to do that. When I work in at UCSC, and I support artists all the time, and I don't give them dull blades to cut foam core. You know, I give them sharp implements. I give them stuff that is necessary to do the work they're going to do. And the necessary work that we need to do the work we need here at the studio is good technology in the air room. And a while ago, we kicked off this 2011 upgrade program at the Museum of Art History in Santa Cruz with a little presentation, did a slideshow, and kind of talked about some of the gear we had here in the studio. And Miles, you didn't make it to that.
I was stuck over the hill working.
You were working hard. And the it exemplifies. Miles and I, we volunteer our time to come in and do this every week. And when we come in and the people calling, you all call in and ask us questions, and we run into you throughout Santa Cruz counties and all of our area coverage when our voices are recognized, it's because of the technology in this room and the staff that make this technology work so efficiently that piece it together, that we can do that, that we can produce this show that we love to do so long, we've been doing for 10 years or so. Without this technology, the show just doesn't work. And the stuff that we have right now needs to be upgraded. It's simple. Needs to be upgraded. So if you'd like to participate in the upgrade to our systems, please feel free to give us a call. The number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And I'm sorry?
That's the wrong 800 number.
Hang on a second. Terry's telling me it's a different 800 number. Ah, it is a different 800 number. Well, let me give the other number then. The number is 1-888-777-1507. It is a toll-free number. Again, it's 888-777-1507. Please do call in. We have people in the other room, including Rick, answering the phone to take your pledge. 888-777-1507. Of course, online at itiskusp.org, right, Terry? Okay, good. Good. It's kusp.org. Miles, please do tell us the story about copyright, and we'll kick into our copyright discussion.
Certainly. It is apparently now a crime in Tennessee to share your Netflix password.
Interesting.
The idea being that if you buy one account and you have three different people streaming at the same time, you are stealing that that service.
And so this is a Tennessee law?
Yes.
Or it was put in court as a lawsuit and a judge said, yeah, that's not good.
No, this was legislation. It's a bill that has been signed into law.
Interesting. Right. Do you know about this, Michael?
Yeah. Yeah, and the RIA is trying to get it, and then the MPAA is also trying to get it countrywide.
Yeah.
But it's relatively new. This is the first time it's happened.
The music industry and the movie industry, if you will.
That's correct. I'm
yeah.
Sure.
Right. Now, this
which
is
curious because Netflix, for example, that being the example I was giving, was not pushing for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As our guest was saying, it was the MPAA, the RIAA.
Interesting. So the thing that's curious to me is that my Netflix account, I use quite a bit on my iPhone and my laptop and play movies. And sometimes I put that in front of my kids and they watch, you know, a classic cartoon or something, an educational piece, using my Netflix. And I'm not using them in the other room, but they're my family. And of course, sometimes we all sit together and watch it together. So, of course, the question of do I have to always be watching it? Can I share it with other people? These are all questions that are really interesting. The other thing is, can't I log in four times and watch four movies at once? Why not? If I've got four computers, why wouldn't I be able to do that? Right?
There's the question of how you're legislating. And this is actually an area where the technology and the law, that's where there's a bit of a collision because it has never really been possible for someone to do this. Like, for example, when we had VHS tapes, or even if we're talking about DVD, it was never possible to have that same DVD or VHS tape in four different players at the same time.
Right. That's true.
But now you can. But it doesn't actually, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, of course, also, we're talking about multiple movies, right? It might be that I want to watch one movie and my kids
almost
watch
certainly
movie,
it is. Yeah.
Right. And we're in different rooms. And I don't know if that's even against the Netflix's policy or not. I'm assuming right now Netflix is not that concerned. They just want to get as many people as possible using their system.
And there probably is. And right now there's also limitation with regard to the bandwidth.
Right.
So to your house, there's an automatic throttle saying you can only have so many movies because you just don't have the bandwidth to your house. As bandwidth increases, that may become more of an issue, but mm-hmm. it's more of the contract that Netflix has between the media producers rather than
now,
anything else.
Netflix, everyone issue. Probably knows about Netflix as a system that you can rent DVDs online. They ship you the DVD, and you keep a certain amount, and then you mail them back to them, and you just get your next DVD. It's a very cool concept. It's been going on for quite a while. And then in the last 2 years, the last year, Netflix allows you to stream a lot of the videos through the computer. And I've stopped getting the DVDs pretty much. So on demand, lots of different movies. The count is under $20. I'm not sure of the price. We won't really have to get into that. But it's a pretty great service. But this question about when it's fair and how it's working is always up in the air because the technology is so... so crazy sometimes.
Right.
It changes so quickly.
Something I would like to talk about is a nice little tidbit, which is streaming video is not the same as when you buy a DVD. When you buy a DVD, you're not buying the movie. You're buying a license to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that
happens
makes sense.
Happens to be attached to the movie.
Well, yeah, sometimes. But that makes some sense because you don't have the right to Brad Pitt's visage. You mm-hmm. have the right to view that visage, that type of thing. But at the same time, streaming is not like DVDs. It's not considered
an ownership.
It's not considered a license that you have just for a reproduction or a distribution.
Mm-hmm.
It's referred to as a public performance.
The stream is.
Yes.
Michael, is that how you
Correct.
Describe it?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's right.
Michael is an attorney in Santa Cruz, focused on intellectual property, including license of intellectual property. Michael formerly is senior counsel for Sun Microsystems and currently an attorney at Axiom. And he basically, as an attorney at Axiom, he's works with other companies, people like Accenture, which is a very large corporation.
Consulting company.
And then also companies like eBay.
Correct.
And you work with these companies to figure out their licensing of their copyrighted material.
That's exactly right? The point, especially now that things like the cloud and open source make it
So what would be the legal ramifications of something a distribution having a license like that or having a public performance? What would be the difference if you brought over a bunch of people to watch this in a venue?
Whether you make money on it or not.
So
if you, for instance, if you have people over to your house mm-hmm. and you have your extended family over to your house and you're watching a movie and it's streaming down, then that's fine. And there's legal doctrine to back it up, and there's use policy that also backs it up. However, if you stream that into the local theater, which you rent for the night, and you charge a fee, that's a different issue.
You charge a fee, okay.
And
would this also apply if, for example, you went in with someone to share a Netflix cost?
No, I don't think so. I think that's really... let me back up just a little bit.
Okay.
Because you talked about the Tennessee law. And
sure.
I'm
sure.
a little confused by the Tennessee law, in fact, of its purpose. I mean, I know what they're trying to do, but why, I don't know, because it seems the fraud laws would cover that straight out. You know, if you're sharing your password among your 50 closest friends, that's fraud. And it's a fraud on Netflix, and uh-huh. you could go after them. If you were having four different lines into your house, and again, you had your immediate family there, you had your extended family there, and some friends of the neighborhood over there, and you gave someone the password to go in the other room and load down an opposite movie, that's not going to be an issue.
Right, that's not a fraud situation.
That's not a fraud situation, and there is, again, legal doctrine that will back that up.
So in some sense, this law would only kind of handle that case, this kind of personal space.
That's right.
Because you would already have fraud situations for, like, renting out your password online or something
right.
like that.
And again, I'm not sure why. It must be some specific reason that they want this so specific a law.
Yeah.
It just seems a little
It's interesting because this case about Netflix and sharing passwords it really exemplifies kind of the complexity of this kind of situation. Because, of course, if I have a family and of multiple users and I want to make my account available to my family, like when I rent the DVDs from them, I want to be able to share the passwords with them.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, if
that was against the policy of Netflix. We're not really sure if it was. But let's say it was against the policy of Netflix. Would Netflix offer a service in which I could have four simultaneous so that I could support my family watching different movies? If they don't support that, then it requires me to make another account with them. And then that separation, I don't really want to give a separate account to one of my kids. I want to kind of meter that. Mm-hmm. So clearly there's reasons for having kind of a one account that you're kind of managing for your family. And the complexity of making that easier for Netflix means software upgrades and different services, which they might not be providing right now, and therefore might not have a solution for it right now. It's an interesting case. It's really a clear space where you see, yeah, the traditional copyright situation is one way, and we live in a very different world. So, Michael, what do you think about currently how are they doing with legislation besides this case? You know, other legislation. How are they doing?
I think they're doing okay. We have a basic tension that's going on that we're trying to deal with, and it's always been this case, but now it's so accelerated that it just seems overwhelming. The technology is moving so quickly, and the uses are happening so quickly that if you are a consumer, you can't even keep up with the opportunities to consume. At the same time, you have legislation trying to go through, and you have court cases trying to go through, usually the legislation being built on court cases, all built on our experience. They want to see enough problems out there and how people solve them to be able to make good legislation. Copyright Office does the same thing. They've got to get it right. They can't put it into law and have it be half-baked. So it takes time. It takes maybe 10, 20, 25 years to evolve some of this stuff. The DMCA, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, came out, and I was astounded at how quickly they got it out and how right it was, large part. So those are the tensions, you know, is how the basic law.
What's some things they got right in that? Because we normally focus on the crazy stories that the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, kind of help support, if you will. What are some of the cases where they actually get it right in the DMCA?
I think one of the places that they got it right was Viacom v. Google and YouTube, where people were posting videos to YouTube, and they were taking pieces of
Viacom
content and putting it up there.
The takedown notice.
Yeah, and they went berserk, you know, and said, you can't do this, and they went after YouTube. Well, YouTube had complied with the safe harbor in the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which says that if we put up a takedown notice, if we follow the rules so that we're responsive to copyright infringement claims, we will be exempt from prosecution by ourselves.
So let's make an example of this. So Miles goes up and finds an NBC show. NBC is owned by what's one of the shows that would be a Viacom show? Let's say Friends, okay? Okay. So Miles gets an episode of Friends that he really likes, and he puts it up on YouTube, and it gets 4 million hits before Viacom notices. Then Viacom says, "Hey, Google, stop it." With a takedown notice, which basically says, we own that copyright, Google, please take that down. And Google responds quickly and turns that system off. And actually, Google notices if Miles does that multiple times, they're actually going to disable Miles' account. So they're kind of handling it. But there was 4 million views of this content that was Viacom's. And of course, there's ads on that site, and Google's making money on it. So the question is, shouldn't Viacom get some of that money? And because of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, it basically says, as long as that pattern is respected of, you take down my content, then Google's not responsible for the loss, if you will, of Viacom's money on that. They should have been more on top of it. Now, see so I see that that's a benefit. The problems, of course, we see is, well, can't anybody just take down notices all over the place? How do you prove that anybody owns it? You know, that's one of the troublesome things. But yeah.
There's about 9 different criteria that you have to meet in order to make a complaint and to serve a takedown notice. And it's pretty rigorous.
Yeah.
In fact, at first there was some debate, was it too rigorous? But it's to really to clear out the the person who's doing it gratuitously.
Because, of course, the thing that would happen if Google didn't have this kind of protection, YouTube didn't have this kind of protection, every video that went up, some staff member would have to check to see if it looked like it was a copyrighted material, which would severely hamper the amount of content that's actually on YouTube. Right? It wouldn't really, the system wouldn't work.
That's right. And I think this is one of the ways that the Copyright Office and the DMCA got it right.
Yeah.
They understood, before it was even in effect, they understood that it would be too cumbersome and it would inhibit the system from really working at its maximum utility.
Yeah.
Interesting thing, I went to look at a clip, Beyond the Sea. show tune clip that I loved. And I ran it for the first and posted it to my Facebook for the first couple of weeks, and there was no problem. And then suddenly I couldn't get into it. I went back, and there was an ad in front of it, a 15-second ad before you could get to it. I didn't find that terrible. I found that fabulous because the piece was still now available to me in a pristine copy, and I just had to, you know, wait through the 15-second ad.
Yeah.
So
pay for it, basically.
The system is evolving. The system is working itself out.
Right. Well, we're going to talk just briefly in a second about, I'm going to ask you about what the difference between copyright, trademark, and patents are, the kind of IP space. And we'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I want to mention that Geekspeak and KOSP is supported by Cruise.io Internet, now offering flexible workspace with 10 gigabits of fiber internet in their new building at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. All of the details are online at cruise.io.com or by calling Cruise.io at 459-6301. Miles, instead of a geek bit today, would you mind?
Yeah, certainly. I wanted to talk a little bit about radio and KUSP specifically as a point of contact in case of emergency. Now, right now, I wouldn't say it was an emergency that it was raining in June.
Have you planted your tomatoes yet? Because I have. It is an emergency. Actually, the cucumbers aren't in the ground yet, so we're good. But
at the same time, this is where you would go for news information if we were cut off for some reason, if you had a serious storm, in case of fire, tune in to KUSP, that type of thing. And that costs money. And that is something that our infrastructure needs some help with. That's something that it would be great if we had that extra amount of money to be able to upgrade the system so that we can provide that service for the community. That really what it comes down to is that public service.
We actually really have a quite amazing emergency response system built into our radio networks in the United States. Like the rules that are governing that are pretty cool. Every station kind of rebroadcasts it on its carrier, and then the other stations pick it up, and
that annoying tone.
The tone that has data actually in it. And then what happens here at the studio, if we get one of these tones during GeekSpeak, I turn around and we have a printer back there that hopefully prints. And this is the kind of stuff that we need. We need upgrade. I mean, we have backup solutions for that. But it does show us where the technology needs to be improved whenever something like that happens.
Right. And by making your contribution now, every dollar you give will be matched by a special federal grant. So please help us out right now, because we don't want to lose out on that money.
That's right. We definitely want to get that money. And to call in to pledge, 888-777-1507. I'll give that number again. We have a goal for today's show of GeekSpeak of $3,000. We are currently only at $1,900 left to go. That means if you call in, we'll chisel that down to nothing within the next half an hour. But we do need your help to do so. And to do so, it's very easy. You just pick up your phone, dial toll-free 888-777-1507, and people in the other room will pick up the phone and walk you through the very quick process. I think it's a couple minutes, and they're really pleasant people. We were sitting in there before, and I want to call now, but I'm on air. So 888-777-1507, please feel free to call. We're going to keep doing wonderful content, and so please do call and pledge. Of course, you can pledge at www.kusp.org. Again, the number, please do pick up the phone now, 888-777-1507, and help us improve our technology. Okay, Miles.
I do have a question, just because, you know, copyright law. It's so simple, anyone can understand it. With regard to that Tennessee law,
right?
Does it change anything for that scenario you talked about, where the extended family comes to town and you pass off the password to someone to go off into another room to watch some media? Is that actually, because you have law rather than existing case law?
Right. I think because there is so much existing case law, and a lot of it is codified in the Copyright Act, that law in Tennessee, being a state law, would fail in the courts if it was taken to its extreme, the extreme which you're talking about. Whether it survives as it is now, I think, is probably going to be questionable. There are all other alternatives in fraud.
Okay. Copyright, trademark, patent. Trademark I'll cover real quick.
Okay.
I sell stuff. People are used to buying stuff from me. If somebody else sells stuff and pretends and uses my name, then the customer doesn't know what product they're actually getting. It basically protects my investment as a business entrepreneur to protect my, so that people, when they buy things, they know they're getting from me. So I make a logo that says GeekSpeak, and I use that name, and other people technically can't use that name as long as I have a trademark on it. So I do my trade under it.
Wait, you're selling stuff through GeekSpeak?
No. You make nothing. And actually, GeekSpeak is a service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence. And he gives us permission to use it. And he actually protects the GeekSpeak trademark. And it's interesting. The first time I contacted you years ago was about that issue. He sent me a stop using GeekSpeak. And I looked it up and figured out, actually, I think KOSP has been using the GeekSpeak name longer than him. But he already had the trademark in place. And we could have gotten this battle situation. And instead, I just called him. We talked. And we're both in a space where it doesn't affect his business. It's always clear that it's different. You know, our voices are always different. And so people know that it's different. So he had no problem with it. But as long as I kept on saying every episode that it is a registered service mark of him, so he can hold on to that service
mark. Which is a good resolution of the problem.
Right. It allows us to keep using it, allows him to keep using it, and there's no battle about it. And I know that somebody else won't come along and try to stop me from using it. So it helps us all out. So that's a trademark and service mark thing. Really clear. That's a name and a logo, and that's that company's. Don't try to reuse it.
Right.
Okay. Patent and copyright, in my idea, kind of serve a different purpose. It's not to do exclusivity only. It's actually the idea of them is a little more grandiose than that. Can you explain what the idea behind copyright is?
I think both copyright and patent have, when we talk about where they're the same, and they're the same in terms of policy, in terms of, you know, the social policy that stands behind both of these things, which is that the person who's the inventor or the person who's the creator should be rewarded for some period of time for his endeavors. He should be encouraged to go on and create and go on and discover.
Is it that the creator should be rewarded, or rather that someone else cannot be rewarded for their work? It's a subtle difference, but...
Oh, I think that one is, that's the ability to enforce your, to enforce your rights, is to stop somebody else from using it, which is, there's a technical difference between patent and copyright.
Yeah, I guess my thought process was, if you write a book, it's not necessarily that someone is going to pay you for that book, but rather that someone else cannot take your book and then sell it and make money off of your book.
It's that you control
the
creative. What's been created.
So that idea is kind of shared between both patents and copyright.
Right, and then on the other end of that is that at some time after the creator has had an opportunity to benefit from his creativity, then the public at large should be able to benefit from the result of what has been essentially, you know, they've given the opportunity to the creator to create by the society itself, and that they should benefit. It should become the commons.
Right. So in copyright, for example, that you have all of Shakespeare's work. Of course, no one owns it. It's been in public domain since.
Actually, Shakespeare was never under copyright, was it?
No.
So everyone owns it. You can take Shakespeare and do it yourself and whatever you'd like. You're welcome to it, basically. And that allows us to not be restricted and nuke works based off of that work. Same thing with any painting that was a certain period of time. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in detail. But patents are similar in that sense. Patents expire. And the reason for that really is so you can start using that idea in your own work.
So it could be the utility can be more broad.
Yeah.
And it can be used on a much wider framework and built on, essentially.
The example I always heard was you originally had the patent for the steam engine. And then that patent expired and someone else was able to patent a steam locomotive. After that, somebody
able to use
that existing technology.
You could adapt. You could go in and use the same mechanics, you know, for different. Otherwise, you would have to license the engine in order to put it into the locomotive shell.
And patents, of course, are not just the design of the actual item. It's actually also manufacturing processes, so how you actually make something.
Correct.
So if I spend a lot of time inventing a better mousetrap and I finally go, yes, this is a better mousetrap. Not that we need those. Mice are really stupid. Better rat trap. When I spend the time and effort, the idea is that then I say to everybody, this is how I did this. And in reward for that that knowledge being kind of public, the government agencies say, okay, no one else can do this without compensating. Nobody else can use this idea and this way of doing it without compensating the original inventor, thereby allowing that process to be public. You don't have that secret trade issue where there's a process to cut stone a certain way and no one ever shares it. And then people that knew how to do it are gone and it's lost. That's happened throughout time. Tradesmen have always kept their trade very secretive. And patent allows us to say, you know what? We're not going to be secret about it. This is how you do it. And because we're sharing it, let's get some protection from it.
That's right.
And that's the big benefit. So they have to expire so that then at some point the society at large can use that as the next step. And in technology, it's crucial. And I think the timeline right now, what is it, 11 years or 9 years? I can't recall.
For patents. 28
years. That seems like a long time in a technology world. So right now, I guess Amazon has the one-click button for 28 years. Seems kind of ridiculous. That was one of the examples of a patent that seems a little silly. But let's not focus on patents anymore. Let's go back into copyright. Copyright originally in the United States, it's right in the beginning of the Constitution, right? We had copyright early on.
We had the basic idea of copyright early on, yes. It's in the Constitution that you should, I've forgotten the exact quote, but, you know, share in the common good of the, you know, make people able to benefit from their arts.
Yeah, yeah. And it's now a little different. At that time, the duration was shorter. It had a certain period of time. It had to do with the creator, and the creator at that time was a human being.
Right.
And now the creator is, most of the time, corporations, even though a human being originally did it, or team, a corporation actually owns. And corporations don't actually necessarily have a death. And the copyrights that they hold normally get sold as the company gets liquidated. So
I say the term of copyright is the life of Mickey Mouse plus 50 years. Because as long as the Walt Disney Company goes on, I guarantee a copyright will not expire Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, which is interesting with that example, which is Mickey Mouse, the Steamboat Willie, was based upon Steamboat Bill by Buster Keaton. So if the same laws that existed today existed back when Mickey Mouse was created, Disney
they
might
have
been
Mickey
that
Mouse.
In existence.
Well,
right?
There certainly would have been a lawsuit.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is the foundation of the Mickey Mouse that kind of shows this so well, Mickey Mouse wouldn't have even existed if the same law that Disney actually supports was on the books at that point. That's interesting, but... Do you think there's anything really wrong with our system right now?
Not really. I mean, I think we have to look at the system as a system that's in continual evolution.
Mm-hmm.
It's always new technology is always driving the growth of the law, and the law is trying to catch up with the technology. But the basic principles are still being applied. What happened in the 18th century? Those basic copyright principles are just being updated to the terminology and to the exact use. And now that we've jumped into the digital age, it's unbelievable the problems. We have problems of when you can take something and make a perfect copy of it and distribute it worldwide in a matter of seconds, you know, unlimited number. It's real tough to take the law that was applicable to making a single copy that had to be repeated by, you know, a hand set up press and make it work. Unbelievably, because the policy was so solid underneath it, that law still applies. It still works, and it seems to be working. We just have to work it out.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to discuss, actually, was that length of time when you talked about Mickey Mouse plus 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Of what is the... One of the things behind copyright is also the incentive to create. So you can create, and someone else can't just take your creation and... Mm-hmm. and have you expend a whole bunch of work without any benefit. What is the idea behind incentivizing Mickey Mouse? Mickey Mouse has already been created, so why would you need to incentivize?
Why keep on rewarding Disney with that copyright?
Uh-huh. And again, this time frame is a technical issue that continually has been in argument mm-hmm. since the beginning. What's the proper tension between the benefit to the creator and the benefit to the society? And so it shifts in time back and forth. There is a different formula. Rather than having it be the life of the author plus 70 years, or worst made for hire is 95 years, I think, right now. There's a different idea that's out there, which is that it should be based on utility. As long as the work is still in commerce, it should be protected.
No, why?
It would be... Because the people who created it are still working on it. They're still expanding it. They're still making new opportunities mm-hmm. for it, even if it's just mugs.
But how does it... I mean, doing this based on commerce would say, as long as you make something that's good, we're never going to make it in the public domain. Because technically, you could continually have that in commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue with Mickey Mouse, for example, is that my lifetime, I won't see that ever enter public domain. That's kind of a permanent... private thing. You know, if it's longer than the lifespan of a human being, and I guess one of the social ideas that I like is that if I had something as a child and I experienced it as part of my culture, but no time in my life can I use that to recreate work, that kind of it's an interesting problem with defining what culture is. It's not really Mickey Mouse, even though I knew it as a child, is not part of my culture because I can't reconsume and reuse it. and therefore I don't own it as a cultural item.
Right, and people have been born after Mickey Mouse lived a perfectly legitimate lifetime and have died without ever knowing it.
Well, it's interesting. I don't agree with that.
Yeah.
And it's because the amazing thing about Walt Disney's marketing strategy behind these major pieces, although it's broken down somewhat now in the digital age, was that they would re-release things like Fantasia and Sleeping Beauty every generation.
Yeah.
They had a number of years between. It was not immediately accessible on DVDs when DVDs were immediately accessible. And so it was a strategic marketing plan.
Okay, but the idea of copyright is to support creating new work. How is giving an indefinite ownership to somebody that can keep using that same work over and over again, how is that helping to create new work?
It's incentivizing the Disney company to continue to exploit that work, and exploit not in the terrible sense of it.
But as a social benefit, it doesn't help society that they own that.
It will have a social benefit after a period of time. After it expires. And it will expire. When I say the life of Mickey Mouse plus 50 years, I'm being facetious.
It will actually expire.
It will expire.
Good. And I think that's the key, is that is at some point it expires, we're good to some degree.
I think
we can all disagree on the length of time.
And
that happens normally. But
okay, and here's something that comes up actually with technology, which is we don't really have media that lasts as long as copyright does. We don't have CDRs. No, I'm talking about things...
storage capabilities.
Yeah, storage capabilities. I'm not talking about things that, like text. Yeah, text we can handle, but things...
a video.
Yeah, or a song.
Yeah.
Unless you're trying to reproduce back on a wax cylinder. A lot of these things are falling out. Now, a company may have a copyright to something, but we have a situation with many areas where the copyright has extended longer than the medium that the work exists on, which means that after the copyright has expired, there is no ability for it to be transferred into the public domain. It doesn't exist anymore.
Because it exists.
Because you don't have
a copy. It's dissolved. It's fallen apart in your hand. Yes.
And that actually gets in a lot into orphaned works. It's a similar kind of problem. Well, I guess not. Let's talk about orphaned works in a minute.
But that's something I've always wondered about with regard to copyright. Even if you did say, yes, it's along with its utility, how do you make sure that it is not ever lost in the future, because there are some works that are not appreciated now, but they may be appreciated 100 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
In a minute, we're going to talk about orphan works. We're also going to talk about tattoo copyrights, a really interesting case. But first, Miles, please.
Thank you to Jim and Judy from Santa Cruz, Jim from Santa Cruz, Anthony from San Jose, Elizabeth from Felton, and Mary from Felton. Thank you very much for your contribution to KUSP.
You can contribute to KUSP right now. I'll get the phone number in just a second. I just want to let you know that we are committed to good news. Here at the station, we get wonderful feeds from NPR, of course. Miles and I are here every week to give you up-to-date commentary and ideas on technology in the news. Don, of course, is here right before us to cover really wonderful cases of medical information. She's quite amazing. And we do all this because we're committed to servicing our community. And our community includes you. You're listening to KUSP right now. And we want to keep doing this work to provide good content to you. And to do that, we're asking you to contribute to help us match a federal grant that will allow us to upgrade our systems so that our systems can stay current and functional as long as we want to keep producing content that you want to keep hearing. So please feel free to call now. The number is 888-777-1507. Again, that's 3 8s and 3 7s and then 1507. 888-777-1507.
And for nearly 50 years, the Public Telecommunications Facilities Program has helped KUSP and other public broadcasting stations replace that old and worn-out equipment. But with regard to federal funding, with regard to state funding, things are always going on the chopping block, especially in hard economic times. So KUSP and other public radio stations are in immediate danger of being zeroed out. You know, that it's just, but at the same time, we do provide that service. And I think of it for myself as like a community insurance. You know, you pay a certain amount of insurance in case when you're driving your car, you get into an accident, except that our community insurance would cost you the cost of a latte every month.
Right.
So, you know, contribute to KUSP, help us upgrade our equipment, and help prevent KUSB from being zeroed out.
We're not asking a lot. We're asking for what you can contribute. And if you can contribute $20, please feel free to give us $20. I'd love to see someone go ahead and donating a dollar a day. It's a wonderful pledge level. You can call in right now and do that. We have a $3,000 goal during Geek Speak. We only have 1,600 left to go. Please give us a call and reduce that number to zero so we match our goal for Geek Speak. We know you love listening to Geek Speak, and now is the time to show that you do, and of course the station in general.
Yeah, and your contribution now before the grant, which expires, by the way, on June 30th.
That's right,
this
we do
year.
Need this money by then.
So that will allow KUSB to capture those federal funds. In fact, your gift will be matched on a dollar-for-dollar basis. So
and
act now.
It's easy
especially
to do.
Folks on the podcast.
888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. And to our thousands of podcast listeners, please do go to KUSP.org. KUSP.org. As long as you pledge before the 30th, that will match dollar for dollar and we'll be able to get the new equipment we so dearly need. All right. Please tell us about copyright and tattoos. Very curious. It's a fun case.
There's an interesting case out there that's just coming up right now. And there's the new movie out called Hangover 2. And part of the conceit is that a guy wakes up after a binge, and of course he has the tattoo on the side of his face, which is exactly like Michael Tyson's tattoo.
It's a big tattoo.
It's a big tattoo, right? You can't hide it. Makeup won't do it.
I see the humor in it right away. You wake up from a hangover. Okay, gotcha.
So evidently the tattoo artist who did Michael Tyson's tattoo is claiming copyright in the tattoo itself. And
that makes sense.
And the movie production company did not go to him and get permission to use the tattoo. This brings up all kinds of really fun and exciting things to copyright attorneys, such as, you know, is this really copyrightable subject matter? Did he make it up, or is it a derivative work of some tribal symbol that's existed for 2,000 years?
Oh, is it? Is it a tribal?
I don't know.
Who knows where the original comes from?
We don't know where it originally came from. You know, or is it just in the design itself complex enough to have copyrightable subject matter qualifications?
Really? Copyright has to be complex enough?
That threshold is very low. But when you look at a symbol, we talk about it, you know, a symbol may be used for trademark protection because of its association with goods or services.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's complex enough, it can also get copyright protection, which is a good strategic protection for, say, knockoffs, fighting knockoffs.
What about the concept of satire? Because it is a comedy.
That's the other part, is that if it is copyrightable subject matter, then is it exempt from copyright claim based because it is a satire? And certainly we're using something here. I haven't seen it, unfortunately. I understand that Tyson's in it himself.
Right? The other thing that's interesting, of course, is that do they really have... I mean, if the copyright holder puts it on Mike Tyson and then they claim they have a copyright, that's a little strange, right? Shouldn't Mike Tyson kind of own the copyright? It is his face.
He just supplied the canvas.
Yeah, that'd be like saying that the page that you print something on has the copyright rather than the person who wrote the item.
I get that, except that if you allow someone to tattoo your face and you let them hold on to the copyright of that, you've stopped any photos from it being taken. You have no more control of your face.
Yeah, that was another curious thing about photographs taken of Mike Tyson's face.
What you've done is you've given an implied license.
You get an implied license to duplicate in other formats, but to duplicate the actual tattoo on another face would be an exact duplication of the work.
Correct.
Ah, interesting. Right. So you've implied it's okay to take photographs of this. So we don't know what the outcome of this case is.
No.
But would you like to
be
this? Probably. That's pretty easy, right? Would you like to be this tattoo artist lawyer representing this? Do you think it's fun enough?
No, I would rather represent the other side.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Well, I think it's easier to defeat.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you look at the design itself, then it's very likely got some tribal origin. And if it doesn't, if he made it up himself, then the satire defense is a wonderfully fun defense to fight.
Okay. Just let me just say this then.
Plus, you have
Mickey
more money
Mouse
if you're on
is
that side.
Three circles. Mickey Mouse is three circles. How? And I'm sure they've got copyright on just not just the trademark of that three circles. That's simple as be. I bet there's been three circles before Mickey Mouse. In fact, there's somebody else. So what about that? I mean,
well, Mickey Mouse
why is the tattoo special and the Mickey Mouse isn't?
Well, Mickey Mouse is probably more special because he can sing and dance.
So you think if you had a non-singing dance, because I would say that if someone put a Mickey Mouse tattoo on their face, just the three circles, Disney would be pretty unhappy.
Yes, they would.
And would probably sue.
That's right.
So That logo, though, three circles, is probably less complicated. Mathematically, it's less complicated than the tattoo that guy has.
Right.
So, and this is the kind of stuff that I love chatting
about. So what happens? Yeah, that actually, that raises a question for me. What happens if someone gets a tattoo of a Disney character, you know, on their face, and they get sued? Like, what's the remedy for that?
Ooh, I don't know. I wouldn't want to ask Disney lawyers.
You know, I think we should find out, Miles. We'll go to tattoo show probably after this. Okay, one other thing about copyright that's always interesting to me is it's clear that Disney's still using a Mickey Mouse. And there's tons of things that have been along for a long time. And clearly, we know the owner is. There's a publisher on it. The whole deal, easy breezy. But then there's somebody that wrote a history of Capitola Village and put out a book and then passes away. And who owns the copyright? It's orphaned. And how do you know whether you can use it? What happens in this orphaned work situation? We don't even know who the originator is.
Right. In the instance that you just gave where somebody dies, you actually can inherit the copyright for the term of the copyright. So that can be passed on to your descendants, which is a large, you know, and long fought right to have that expansion.
So I record a little song. I post it on some message board somewhere. I forget my account name and it's out there.
That's
no one knows.
Work.
That way you can't take a hit on an artist and then get their work.
That's right. Well, this has been a problem for a long time, and it goes back to your question of, you know, of what happens when work is in decay. If it's the artist, if it's under copyright and the artist does not want it out there, he should have the right to not put it out there. I mean, James Joyce burned Ulysses, I think, before. He threw part of it in the fireplace before it was finally published.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a right. If it just is more likely the case where it's been abandoned, where it's just, it hasn't, like you said, you left a piece of software code on a bus stop, you know, and no one knows where it is. There's all this work out there, especially now with the internet, where you can see so much work, so many images that are out there with no way of tracking them down. And if you want to use it, how do you use it? And again, the law on the other side of protecting the artist also wants the utility for the broader society to utilize this stuff. It hates waste. And the Copyright Office right now is starting to do probably what I think is going to be the most far-reaching advance in copyright law, which is to develop a program by which you can track down orphan works and utilize them with a certain amount of due diligence.
Awesome. I look forward to it. We are finishing up GeekSpeak, and GeekSpeak is the registered service mark of online tonight with David Lawrence. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at kosp.org. Miles, some thank yous?
Yes, thank you. Ken from Salinas and Loretta from Santa Cruz, thank you so much for your contribution to KUSP.
And today we have $1,300 left to go. Please call up now to help us remove that goal for GeekSpeak's hour. We, of course, will take your pledge all the way till June 30th when our matching grant runs out. Please do it now so we don't forget. You listen to KOSP and you love it, and we have gear and equipment that needs updating. It's an easy thing. You call up and donate, and we will get the new gear that will make doing the show and doing the radio station work here so much better.
The roads are treacherous anyway. Just pull over for 5 minutes, get your bearings, call up KOSP, leave a pledge. You're right back on that freeway.
888-777-1507. Again, that's 888-777-1507. Car Talk is made possible by a grant from the Holly Family Fund and the Community Foundation of Santa Cruz County, and we appreciate their support. All the work we do here is made by generous support of you, our listeners, and we're just asking to help upgrade the system. Please feel free to do that right after the show ends. And coming up next, of course, is Car Talk. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, my name is Lyle Troxell. In the air and with me is attorney Michael Mont. Thank you so much for being here today, Michael.
Pleasure.
And Miles Elam. I'll see you next week, Miles.
All right.
Please feel free, again, pick up the phone, 888-777-1507. We'd love some new equipment. Stay tuned now for Car Talk for KOSP and for GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. We'll see you next week.